Welcome back to another episode of the Catholic Buzz Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Father Daniele, and I'm joined, as usual, by Josh Sullivan.
Hello.
Welcome to you, Josh.
Thank you.
And Matt Van Milligan.
Hi.
Matt, welcome. And so lots happened just over the matter of this week, past weekend and things like that. And if people didn't watch the news, Pope Francis was in the news again.
Of course, this week.
And you know, when Pope Francis is in the news, it's either that he's done something that maybe some media partners like, or he's done something that most media partners hate. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened this past weekend, because Pope Francis, on March 1st, was giving a talk to the beginning of a conference, I think it was, on anthropology, right? And the Research and Anthropology of Vocations Institute was meeting at the Vatican, and Pope Francis gave sort of an opening address, I think it was, to it, right? And he was very critical of gender ideology. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the headlines that came out of that talk from Pope Francis was that Pope Francis has called that the ugliest danger of today is gender ideology.
Yeah, yeah.
So as soon as he said those words, you know it was going to spread across media and social media.
That's clickbait right there.
Yeah. And pretty strong words. Now, just to give a little context here, it's not the first time Pope Francis has spoken out against a gender ideology. In fact, he's spoken about it quite often.
Yeah,
and he has always maintained that maybe he hasn't used the words ugliest danger, but he has used the word dangerous referring to gender ideology. And basically, the Pope said that the reason why it's dangerous is that it blurs the lines between males and females. It makes everyone the same, and that is dangerous as our development of people, because we value the differences between men and women. And for maybe people who don't exactly maybe understand what gender ideology, that's basically what it is that we're blurring the lines between men and women. People today, it's becoming more commonplace where people are identifying with a gender that is different from their biological sex, that they were born, let's say, biologically born a man, and now expresses themselves as a woman, or nothing, like someone who's non-binary, who doesn't attribute themselves to either of those categories. And this is becoming frequently a problem, because you know, today there are, if you use any social media app, there are so many choices when you have to select a gender, right? I think Facebook has close to 70.
Wow.
Like, that's just insane. Yeah. I don't even know. We don't have time to go through the list that Facebook has available. But let's do some stat work first. Because here in Canada, a couple of things about this situation, okay? So we're talking today, obviously, about this topic, about gender. And Stats Canada in 2022 released numbers. And of the people aged 15 and over who were counted on the census, there were about, at the time, 31 million people aged 15 and over who were counted on that census. 100,815 people identified as transgender or non-binary. So let's do the math.
Yeah.
And it's 0.33% of the population.
So 0.33 of a percent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's not a full percent.
It's not a full percent of the population. Okay. And not a full percent of the population. It's and the highest numbers were from the age category between 15 and 34. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And that's not surprising.
No,
that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. But I was surprised at how low the number was, actually, to tell you the truth, because really, it seems like the way that it's talked about and the way that a number of media outlets, schools, professional corporations kind of push it, it seems like it's affecting more people than the stats show, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things that pretty much every TV show you watch now has to have a character that identifies as either gender fluid or non-binary or something to that effect.
Yeah.
All the popular shows. I think like I almost wait for the time when I'm binging a Netflix show of some sorts. When is the non-binary, when the gender fluid character going to introduce themselves? You know what I mean? Because it's kind of at that point now. So it means like out of, five or six main characters, one of them is. That seems to be, what's that, one out of like a 20% of the population. You know what I mean? If it's right. One out of five or one out of, even if you go one out of 10, that's 10% of the population.
Right.
But that number seems surprising.
A third of a percent in Canada. So in people's day-to-day lives, mm-hmm. Where they might encounter this, you could have a child or a relative who is transgender, mm-hmm. Who identifies with another gender or non-binary. Some people have shared, at family gatherings, people, some of their nephews or nieces are using different names now. People might also see this at work because a lot of professional groups are sort of asking or pushing employees to use pronouns on things like emails, sign-offs, business cards, whatever it might be, right? So people might see it there. And people might see it in the headlines, because in the headlines, you see a lot of headlines where there are people who were born biologically a male, who now identifies as a female playing on a female sports team. So yeah, people see headlines like that.
You see it a lot in the sports section. I think that's where I see it mostly come to light.
Right. And that's sort of all across sort of professional and amateur sports right now.
What people are starting to having to decide now, is it okay? I mean, this is a whole other, I'm going to say a whole other podcast, but is it okay for these people who identify as biologically male? And this was something that came up in the Olympics and everything else, because if you're biologically male, you'd have more testosterone and those things. And these are drugs that you might pump your system full of to be better. If you were a female, you could pump yourself full of it. So, like, there would have to be some. Yeah. They're looking at the laws and regulations to make it. I'm going to say equal for both biological males to compete with biological females,
and it would be illegal for
a female
to inject themselves with these performance enhancing
drugs
and hormones to even just to get to a same kind
and so I think that's why it's in the paper right now, is they're trying to figure out like what one of the things that we know as when we categorize men and women, men are stereotypically stronger, they're normally more muscle mass, they're more and women so when you're competing men against men for lifting weights and all that kind of stuff, it's not fair for men to lift weights against a female because they have more muscle mass, they have more body mass, they have more. It's just a regular. So you have men compete against men, you have women compete against women on that.
Yeah, there's that, like the famous case, I think, is that swimmer, biologically male, identifies as a woman. Leah Thomas is
his name?
Their name. And so swimming, this is the sort of the big name that sort of was the, perhaps even maybe the first openly transgender person in the swimming sport. Okay, so why I mention that is because that's where people might be seeing that. So there's all these areas of our life where people might be encountering this, right? So what do we say as a Catholic a Catholic faith about this topic? Because on one hand, you have the emotional side of things. As a parent, you want to love your children. If they're going through something like this, you want to love them. And there's that emotional side. What do I do? What does my faith say about this? And how do I love my child? Then there are people who are very strongly against, right? Very strongly for. So where do we as a Catholic faith sort of teach What do we teach about this issue? Okay, so let's do a little bit of work here together.
Yeah, in this area. Okay.
Because I want people to first understand that by first and foremost, we have to approach this situation when we're dealing with real people with love. We have to. And I know that sounds like a, you know, an easy way out for Catholics to say, but it's very true. Mm-hmm. When we're, it's easy to deal with ideas. It's when we're dealing with people, that's where our faith kind of hits the road, right? And every child, every person is created by God, and they have a dignity that we are to uphold as Catholics, okay? So that's first and foremost, that we value each person. Now, that doesn't mean that we agree with all sorts of things. I mean, both of you are parents. Mm-hmm. Your kids do lots of things that you don't agree with, right? And you have to sort of correct them or shepherd them, guide them, right? So, but you love them. You love them, okay? So it's a situation that I think we have to approach first and foremost with love. Okay, so the church teaches, number one, that someone's body and someone's sex, they're not separate. Mm-hmm. They're not separate. Both of them make up the total person, right? And they're not capable of being separated from each other. Okay, this is what the Catechism of the Catholic Church says, number 364, for those of you listening and want some sort of reference. Yeah. So the human body shares in the dignity of the image of God. It is a human body precisely because it is animated by a spiritual soul, and it is the whole human person that is intended to become, in the body of Christ, a temple of the Spirit. Man, though made of body and soul, is a unity. And for this reason, man may not despise his bodily life. Rather, he is obliged to regard his body as good and to hold it in honor, since God has created it, and I love this part, and will raise it up on the last day. So just like body and soul are a unity, our body, our sex, they're not separate. They are a unity. God has created us as good, and God will raise us up. Yeah. Like there's an eternal dimension to our body that I think sometimes we forget.
Yeah, I think like it's noteworthy that the Pope's remarks were in at a conference on anthropology.
Right.
And I think coming to what you're saying is that like how do we confront this? Okay, yes, it's easy to talk about this in the abstract. It's easy to talk about, you know, natural law and like all of these kind of philosophical approaches to like what is humanity, what is like kind of essential differences and things like that. But I think like this isn't a new problem. It's a new manifestation of an old problem. So like the fact that the soul and the body represent a unity, dualism was one of the early problems that the church that you have your body and your soul as these separate and distinct things. Like, no, these are, these represent a unity. You don't put on, your soul doesn't put on your body like you put on a shirt. Mm-hmm. Or like this represents like a normative, to use the philosophical term, aspect of yourself. This is, your body is, an ontological part of you. It's an aspect of creation. You're created in the image and likeness of God. And if we go back to Genesis, male and female, he created them. The church has been dealing with the problem of trying to separate these for a long time. The new or the modern kind of version of this is that, instead of putting on your body like you put on a shirt, people are putting on a different gender. People are putting on a different identity. They're kind of trying to detach themselves from kind of the reality or the kind of full integrated, person that God created them as.
And Pope John Paul II, in his Theology Body, spoke out against this, right?
Yeah.
He said that the body is created, it's not just like a tool of functionality,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's an expression of God's design for all of us, and it reflects like God's love and God's design for us, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like just putting on something to represent some sort of functional part of us or to express something that we might feel, right? like if we didn't feel spiritual, for example, you couldn't say, well, I don't have a soul anymore, right? Or I'm soulless. I'm going to identify as soulless. I mean, that can't happen, right? Yeah. It's just not able to happen.
Yeah, sorry. Just if we're on kind of theology of the body, like one of the first things that he deals with before he even gets into kind of human sexuality and things like that, he talks about like the incarnate reality of our lives. Like this is something that we are. Again, it's not something that's put on. It's something that we're faced with very early on, and it is again like you know, we have different degrees of identifiers. You know, we have if I were to wake up in the morning, you know, wearing a different shirt, that's a descriptive difference. That's not a big deal. If I were to wake up in the morning and I have a different profession, you know, I'm not a teacher anymore. I'm that would be a bit disorienting, but that's not a normative aspect of myself. If I were to wake up and actually be a woman, that would be an ontological flip. That would be, that would be a difference that would, take me out of my, lived experience up until, this point in my life. So, again, we are faced with the reality of kind of the fact that we are incarnate souls. You know, we have bodies, or like, what did C.S. Lewis say? He says, I'm not a body that has a soul. I'm a soul that, possesses a body temporarily. Again, like combating this kind of dualism that these are separate ideas, that like, no, we are incarnate souls. These represent a unity, and that we don't have the opportunity or the flexibility to just kind of reinvent or redefine or kind of, change what we are at kind of a base level.
So another thing that we would say is we like the church teaches that life begins at the moment of conception, right? Sex is determined by genetics, by biology, by chromosomes, okay? And the medical term is gender dysphoria for the feeling of unease that a person may feel of being mismatched between their biological sex and their gender identity, right? But even in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, number 2333, it says that because God has given us equal dignity, that every man and woman should accept and acknowledge his sexual identity, right? And it's something that's given to us right from the moment of conception, that this unease that people feel between their biological sex and their gender identity is actually what the medical world calls a dysphoria, right? Not popular language, but that's that's the medical term for
it. Yeah, and I looked it up today before the podcast just to see, and it's still in all the medical journals. That's what it's described as even today. It's not something that's changing, you know what I mean? Because I was like, I wonder if they would have changed the language or... Because what we're hearing today on social media or in the social aspect. But no, that's still, it's still what it is, and it's still defined the same way.
That's right. And so to be clear, with everything we've already said here, to be clear, the Catholic Church does not support any alteration, whether through chemical assistance like puberty blockers, for example, right? Or through physical surgeries to change one's sex. Like, does not support those. Those types of procedures or therapy, they change the appearance of someone physically, but not their genetic reality.
That's right.
So the church does not support any of those alterations.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we talk about when we're talking about faith, reason. Reason suggests that you're created with these genetics, XXXY chromosomes, and we don't have a way of changing that. I mean, that's the way that you were born, and that's at the moment of conception. You get an XY or an X,
that's right.
XX chromosome. We learned about that before, like that's in biology. So we can't change that, you know?
Okay, so with all this, how do Catholics respond to this situation, right? And I want to go back to what I said before. We have to be loving. Let's think about this, okay?
The world would suggest that as Catholics or Christians in this, knowing what we've just talked about, that Catholics should come out and turn or burn type of attitude. That's right. What I'm going to say the world suggests that that's, but that's not what the church is saying, and that's not what Jesus has said, that we need to treat this situation. And that's not how, I mean, while there are potentially people that identify as Catholic and Christian that would handle situations like this, kicking people out of their house and no longer having a home and you're not welcome here anymore and those type of things, that's not how the church says to handle this, right?
That's right. And like we have to be supportive and loving of the person, right? But not necessarily of the sort of choice that they're making to identify as something different. So whether you're a mother or father, brother or sister, friend, whatever, we do have to be loving, right? And we have to talk about these issues with our children or with our family members or friends who are going through these things without not coming from a place of hostility, like not coming from a place
or
of
judgment, like, in or a way. Judgment. But yeah,
exactly.
I think you need to speak truth to the situation, but at the same time through love.
But before we even get there,
it's just about love.
Make sure that we're in the proper place, right?
It's a very hard thing to do.
It's very hard. And I can only imagine, you know, a parent that has to deal with this. It's a major cross to carry, right? So we have to realize that we have to come from the proper place.
Yes.
All right?
Agreed.
Because here's what I think in these situations. If someone under my care, spiritual care or something like that, if they've come to the point in their life where they don't feel themselves in their body, to me, my heart goes out to them. That there's a sadness inside of them that is not going to be helped by making them feel more unloved.
Yeah.
Or more
ostracized.
Yes, pushed aside, cast aside, whatever. If someone has gotten to the point where they are saying that they feel like a totally different person other than from the body that they've been given, to me, I look at that with tremendous sadness for that person, because something within them is there's a terrible sadness within them, because
there's a hurt,
a pain, and it's only perpetuated by the decision that they're making to change their expression of gender. I'm not saying at all that it's easy for people to go through this.
No,
like young people who go through this, it's not easy at all. And so we don't want to add to the hurt. But I also believe that by supporting their decision and by encouraging that decision, we are only adding to the hurt in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be truthful, we have to be very sensitive, very supportive, but truthful in charity. Mm-hmm. And we have to try and understand what is going on in the heart and the mind of someone who's making this sort of decision, right? Because it's coming from it's not just coming from a place of tremendous joy and elation. There's been a struggle within their heart that we want to try and understand,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I want us to keep that in mind, okay? And so I want us also as Catholics to think about that from a spiritual perspective as well. Like Jesus Christ has come to this earth. He has taken on our sin and he's died on the cross and risen from the dead to show that God will go to every single possible length to show his love for us. And there are people in our community, in our schools, in our parishes, in our families who are hurting so much. And we are not being people who are sharing the love of God. Like, I want to just love these kids so much so that they come to love who God made them to be as the gift that God has given them through who God has shaped them to be through their through God's design for them. Right.
I think about a lot of times when we're talking and we're counseling teens and we're talking to teens, and one of the things that we talk about, and I just realized it comes down to this as well, is that like sometimes the prayer that I pray for these, like, let them see themselves through your eyes, Lord. Yeah. Let them see themselves who you created them to be. And when I'm talking about that, I'm specifically saying, like, a lot of times teenagers identify themselves a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
But the world even tells us we identify as in a bunch of different ways. Specifically, we identify by our sins. If you steal something, you're a thief,
right.
And that is your identity as a thief. If you're a fornicator, then that's how you identify. If you lazy or sloth or what, like, you identify by the things that you do or the. But God wants us to be His children, and so when we bring it back to identity, you are a son or daughter of God, but you are a child of God, and God loves you exactly as you're created, as he created you to be. And all the other things that the world imposes on you, everything else that, take that, like, strip that all away, and then just be who you are in God's eyes. Like, if you could see that, you know what I mean? That's what a lot of times when I'm counseling teens, that's my prayer going through my head a lot of times. Just like, oh Lord, they're filled with so much hurt. And it's not necessarily to do with gender ideology. It's just any hurt. But like, oh Lord, like, they identify on this one specific topic because one time they did this thing, or one time, like, they just, oh, if they could only see themselves the way that you see them with all that love, that little piece is nothing to do with what's going on. So the same kind of thing here. I mean, it's harder because their whole identity is wrapped around this identity, yeah. Right?
I think that's a good way of framing it, because, like, identity isn't an exact science. Yeah. That is, like, especially when you're talking about kind of that transition in adolescence, or, you know, even a teenager, you're talking about, like, teens or young people, you know, not feeling fully comfortable in their skin. What 15-year-old feels fully comfortable in their skin, has, like, a concretized identity that they're, you know, they're confident in, that they're, and you see these, but they're, in my experience, the exception and not the rule. And this transition of adolescence into adulthood is really a process of finding your identity, finding, mm-hmm. Where you are in the world. And we had a kind of a quick discussion before we were rolling about, you know, what you identify with, what your hobbies, your interests, your whatever. And you have kind of innate kind of, you know, masculine traits, but you also have a lot of kind of conventional masculine traits. Like, you know, you may like wrestling, you may not like wrestling, but, like, whether or not you like wrestling doesn't determine whether or not you're a man. You know,
yes,
if you a couple weeks ago, I admitted to liking Jane Austen novels, you know, that's not an indicator that, I'm not masculine in that. Right? So, like, we have this broad conventional understanding of masculinity that, again, when you're going through this process of, you know, finding your identity, where you fit in kind of the social and, you know, relational apparatus of, you know, high school and, you know, starting your profession, it can be difficult to navigate. So you're saying some people are, you know, this kind of the insecurity that's kind of packaged with this process, that can translate into, you know, I don't feel secure in my own skin. What you're saying about, like, what is the fundamental source of your identity? You know, for kids who are given kind of that firm foundation, is like, no, your identity is that you are made in the image and likeness of God.
Yeah.
You know, that should be our kind of unshakable foundation. And that should be kind of the pretext for all of our discussions with people who are, you know, struggling with this situation, or these kind of, questioning kind of their identity and where they fit.
Yeah. We have a few minutes left here, and I want to address three things.
Okay.
Okay, so hold me accountable, because I said three things. Number one, I want to address the question that I get a lot from people about using pronouns on their work emails, or their company expects them to use these pronouns. So I just want to say a word about that, because I want people, and this is not a cop-out answer whatsoever, I want people to really think of this. The church expects us to make every decision in our life from our well-formed conscience. Mm-hmm. And I want people to form themselves well when it comes to this topic first, and let that be the guiding factor for them, and not any pressure that comes mandated down from a corporation, right? What we're doing is we are sometimes just following what is mandated to us instead of following what we believe. And the more we do that, the more we put our brothers and sisters in Christ in the situation where they're forced to do so, mm-hmm. right? If more people would say, I'm not doing that. That's, yeah. you know, I'm not doing that. Then it would be, that would be commonplace, not the other way around.
I think it would be simple to use the same ideology in that situation. I'm not comfortable with doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable identifying my pronouns in this kind of email. I'm not comfortable with doing, and they can take that however they want. Maybe you're not comfortable because you're gender fluid and you don't know, or it could just mean that you're not comfortable in doing this because it's against your faith or it's against mm-hmm. it's against what you believe in or that you would have to identify this way or another.
Exactly.
And so, but you saying that simple, I'm not comfortable with that. Yeah. If you know, like that's standing up to the mandate.
And coming back to your question about like how do you encounter these people, encounter these situations. Like you meet people where they're at. So like if you're talking about you're dealing with a pastoral situation or we're dealing with someone that we know we have a relationship with, you know, that's dealing with it on one level. You're encountering the person. When you're talking about, you know, corporate communication strategies and mandates and all these things, you're engaging the issue on another level. You're engaging it on kind of a policy level. Yes. So then that's probably a better arena for the more abstract discussion. But also, you know, this is a professional disagreement. This is a, you know, you can be professional and you can disagree. Like there's, for the moment, we still have kind of the protection of free speech. Things that, but like it can take the form of, you know, I'm not comfortable doing this. Just like this isn't, you know, I have a conscience objection to this. You can also have it on the basis of language. You know, this isn't how language works. You know, language actually, you know, is an emergent property of, you know, societies and interpersonal interactions. Like mandating speech and legislating, you know, this is what words mean, this is what they don't mean, these are the words you're allowed to use. And like, is not actually, you know, if you know, not everybody's interested in the history and philosophy of language. But again, that's another angle you can approach it from. And just like that, like you can try this at a policy level and you may get some traction, but long term, just in the nature of how language develops, it's not going to last.
Okay, number two is I want to caution parents of young children about what is being taught in their schools.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's remind people that just because a school might have the word Catholic on it doesn't mean that the Catholic Church has any affiliation with it or has any sort of role in overseeing how it functions, right? And today, more so in both, in all systems that are publicly funded, that includes public schools and Catholic schools, they're all publicly funded by the government, there are things that are being taught in classrooms that are contrary to the Catholic faith when it comes to gender. That's happening younger and younger, mm-hmm. and parents need to watch, oversee what their kids are learning in school when it comes to these issues. Because we all know that when children get an idea in their head from a young age, right, that this the curiosity of children takes us to a whole new level. You know, like when we were children, we wanted to be all sorts of things, right? And if what's being taught from a teacher in a classroom is that you could be whatever gender you want or whatever it might be, kids start to ask themselves the question now, mm-hmm. right? So if you're a parent, keep an eye on what is happening in the classroom. If you have an issue with what's happening in your classroom, usually the proper process is to speak to the teacher, then the principal, and then bring it to the school board. That's sort of the way school boards sort of format the
teacher first
way of of bringing a complaint. Okay, so that's the second thing I want to say.
Can I just say really quickly too? I my son texted me today with this very issue in mind. I think he texted you as well, just saying this is what's being taught. I need help here. Like this is what is going. And he took pictures of the slideshows, and so this is very much a real thing, very much happening today. Like it happened today as we filmed this podcast. It was a text message I got from my son saying, "What do I do in this in grade 9?" You know what I mean? And so that like this is a very real situation. And then they're being asked to do assignments from, oh, you know, your friend, people don't agree with your friend who's transgender. How would you defend that transgender point?
How would
of view?
You correct them?
Yeah. How would you correct those people that don't agree
that
with,
don't agree?
You know, and so like they're it's, yeah.
Yeah. It's assuming one position.
Yeah.
Which is wrong with the whole, like the whole premise of the assignment is wrong.
And I think one of the things that we have to point out here, a lot of times people come from this area from a point of love in the sense of they're trying to stop bullying. This is where a lot of this kind of comes forward is they're hitting the agenda of the anti-bullying campaign. And so they're trying to teach. But one of the things that I feel schools are missing on a big point is that we're not teaching them that we can have different opinions. That we can have, that I can, my opinion can differ from Matt's opinion, can differ from yours, Father, and that we can still be good friends.
Still love each
and
other.
And still love each other. Yeah. We can have, no, it has to be that everyone agrees to the exact same thing. Everyone is exactly, and if you're not, then you're ostracized. Yeah. And you know what I mean? But specifically to the mandate of whatever the school is teaching at the time, yeah. Where we got to come back to the, no, we can have difference of opinions. We should learn to defend our opinions, and we should learn to have discussions about the opinions without putting our personal self into the mix. And be able to debate ideas versus personals.
Okay, and quickly, the last thing here, because we're getting a little tight on time here, is the last thing I want to say is to parents is you have to monitor what your kids are watching online. You have to. That giving people a cell phone, giving your children a cell phone or an iPad or... TV time, like iPad time or whatever they call it, you know, screen time is what I was, you know, giving people unsupervised screen time as children and young adolescents is giving them access to a whole world out there that is perverse. It's not like the internet when I was growing up where, you know, you got excited because you pressed send on an email. There are things online kids are accessing that's through some of the mainstream
social media platforms.
Yep, for sure. There's images, there's commentators, there are people out there who are sharing these beliefs that, you know, and people wonder why, how did my children even think of that, or where did that word come from, or why are they doing that, or where did they get that idea from? Unsupervised screen time as young adolescents, as children, is not okay. It's not okay. And I think parents really need to take that more seriously.
You need to have open, honest conversations with your kids. You need to start them young at like 2, 3, 4 years old. I sit my kids in the car and they would just ride with me to go get groceries or whatever the case may be. But we'd have open, honest conversations about what they're going on in their life. At that point, the most important thing was the bug that they caught that day or the worm. Right. But you're
as
listening.
You get older,
as you get older, it actually becomes into more and they start bringing you things like my son who can text me about very specific issues that they know, I don't know how to handle this. How do I do this, Dad? How do I answer? How do I respond? Like those are the good relationships that you want to have with your kids.
Exactly. And that's very good because I don't think that happens enough.
No. Yeah.
And I think we are just assuming that our children are behaving online. It's so easy to do whatever you want online and not be caught. Okay, we didn't even get, we're out of time. I wanted to talk about the bill in Canada, Bill C-16, that has added to the criminal code any speaking out against the idea of gender ideology or things. So, but we didn't get there today. Maybe we'll do that on another episode when we talk about Canada's bills and laws. That might take a whole series of episodes. I don't know. So if you have any comments to leave for us, you can leave them in our social media comment boxes, or you can email us at askus@thecatholicbuzz.com. That is all the time we have today. So for Josh Sullivan and Matt Van Milligan, my name is Father Daniele. We'll see you next time on the Catholic Buzz.